Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to the very end of the episode to get a rundown of the latest news. But first, we've all been there. Your laptop suddenly won't turn on. The zipper on your favorite jacket gets stuck. Or the old toaster that you picked up at a garage sale gives up. I'm sure I can speak for many of us when I say we'd probably toss it and buy something new. But what if you could fix it instead? For free? Across the Chicago area, repair cafes are bringing folks together with volunteers who know how to breathe life into broken household items. And it's part of a growing movement pushing back against our throwaway culture. In this episode of the pod, we'll learn how these events work and hear why they're catching on. At the table was Maria Anna Rafak, Campus Sustainability Coordinator at Joliet Junior College, Elise Hoffenberg, who's a clerk with the Township of Lyons, and Amy Yee, Economy and Business Reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. We started with the women behind the repair cafes telling us how they got it off the ground. Maria went first.
I'm blessed to have some amazing students, and we had a student, Ashley Klinder, and she said she had heard about this new movement online. And there was a repair cafe in Oak Park, the first in Illinois. Mm-hmm. So she went up there for a weekend, went to their repair cafe, and came back and said, we have got to do this. So we hosted one event. Oak Park actually came and helped us.
Oh, cool.
Shout out to Max. And then we started our own. We became an official repair cafe the next year.
Awesome. Elise, what was your origin story?
Well, you know, we are really committed to sustainability at the Township of Lyons, and I attended a Go Green LaGrange meeting 3.5 years ago, and they were tossing around the idea of creating a repair cafe, something I'd never heard of before. We were heading into the summer, and we have this amazing internship program where students between the ages of 16 and 24 come in and they learn leadership skills. Mm-hmm. Well, that summer, I said, hey, guys, let's build a repair cafe. So yeah. These three college and high school students, they put together the foundation. They found volunteers. They got donations from local hardware stores.
I love that.
Yes. And 3.5 nearly years later, we are just a bustling, monthly, amazing repair cafe that kind of redeems my belief in society.
And were you seeing, Maria, like, was there a need that you were seeing that you needed to fill? Like, what made you really want to take it from, oh, this is a cool idea that they're doing in Oak Park, to, we got to start these events too?
I think it was the first event. I think we hosted an event called Busted to Beautiful. And
perfect,
like I said,
the
Oak Park folks came, and we had one young man who showed up with a duffel bag, and we fixed his whole wardrobe. But the best part of the story was, about three shirts in, she takes him around the other side of the table and taught him how to put buttons on. And then he was helping repair shirts that were coming
in. Wow.
And that transfer of knowledge, and kind of watching that interaction between different age groups, that was kind of like, I think we're on to something here.
Now, Amy, you've been writing about this stuff for the Sun-Times. You've written about upcycling, about a repair fair at the Chicago Tool Library, a reverse Black Friday market in North Center. Talk about the reasons you're hearing from folks that you're speaking with about why they attend these types of events.
Yeah, so last year I attended a repair fair at the Chicago Tool Library. It's in West Garfield Park. I highly recommend this as a resource to people. You can borrow tools and equipment for free. But they have periodic repair fairs where their huge space is filled with different stations where people can just come in and bring their items that need repair. Mm-hmm. So there's like an electronics corner. There could be like a sewing corner. I was amazed at, you know, the people who were there from all walks of life,
yeah,
from all over the city. And then the people who were repairing things, I mean, sometimes they just love, for example, sewing or knitting, and I can't do that, but they have a special knack for it, and they really like it, and they're really good at it.
Yeah.
And then in the electronics corner, I do remember people were bringing in all kinds of things, like, fans, and you know, there was actually a pachinko machine that someone brought in, and these the people who were repairing them, they are often engineers, like trained engineers. They might be like teachers, or you know, there was actually a trained physicist who works at a lab at University of Chicago who was there volunteering his time.
That is awesome.
It was awesome to like meet and talk to the people who were there and just the joy that they felt with being able to see something that had sat in a corner for a long time and just seeing it brought back to life.
I would be so happy because, you know, you often put that thing aside, right? That broken thing, you're thinking, oh, okay, I don't even know why I'm hanging on to this. So to see that someone could actually bring it back to life, that is just, that lifts my spirits just hearing other folks' joy. But Elise, talk more about some of the types of things that folks bring in to get fixed. So electronics seems like it's high on the list.
Yeah, we have electronics. We have a knife sharpening station with two different knife sharpeners. We have a jewelry repair station. We have electronics, sewing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we have just such a variety of services we offer. And it's really a beautiful thing because our repairers, it's sort of a makerspace for them. And many of them are retired. But I think they get so much joy out of helping others and then working together and collaborating. It's just, you know, I once mentioned to somebody that I think the best places to live in America must have a repair cafe because it's such a great, beautiful, feel-good event. And, you know, we have an individual who comes every month, and every month he goes and he drives around and he pulls something out of the trash somewhere and brings it in to be repaired, and then he gives it to somebody else. So
who is this guy?
I know, right?
Saint?
Right?
Who's this angel on earth?
Yes,
that's
absolutely
amazing.
So many angels on earth at repair cafes. It's a beautiful thing.
That's actually very cool. So I have in my hands, my hot little hands here, my iPhone 11, which I often get made fun of for.
I have one too.
When I go around town, people are like, oh gosh, how old is that thing? Because it doesn't look like the fancy new iPhones. I don't even know what number they're at this point. But I've had this baby since 2019. And it's you know, it's kind of done some things on me over the years. But I would rather repair it than just keep up with the Joneses and buy the newest ones, right? Would your repair cafe be able to help me out, Maria?
I would tell you that our repair cafe would do their best to try to fix it. Mm-hmm. But I think the most important thing we do is actually diagnose. Like, we can tell you what is wrong, or the reason it's not working is because we found like whole loaves of bread in the bottom of your toaster, right? So I think there's kind of...
that would be a problem.
Yeah. So kind to be trying to be able to diagnose it. But I think you hit on something important. It's this throwaway culture or buying the best. And I think repair cafes are kind of directly leading towards, you know, legislation, right to repair, that people should have the right to repair, that these guides should be made free to the public, and we should be able to buy the things we need. So if you needed to take that screen off or pop it off or put something in it, you'd be able to find how to do that. You know,
right.
God bless YouTube.
Yes.
We can fix just about anything.
YouTube University, as the kids call it. So Amy, you know, on the same token, right now we're dealing with a lot. There's like seemingly endless inflation. That's one. New tariffs are coming and going. There's a war with Iran, rising cost of living, the rising cost of literally everything, utilities and more. Do repair cafes help people sort of exert more control over their financial lives, you think, by holding on to some of these items for longer?
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of the news peg when I wrote this article last year. It was April of last year when there was a lot going on and a lot of uncertainty and inflation and new federal policies and tariffs. And when I asked people directly, you know, are tariffs affecting you? I mean, it was a bit too early to say, but people had it in the back of their minds, and they talked about, there was one person I talked to, her name is Mary Soria, and she had her whole family there, her children and her parents were all there. And she just said that there's a lot of fear-mongering and anxiety, and she said we try not to let that overwhelm us. And she did talk about how, you know, her coming to the repair fair, it felt like being able to have a little bit of control or autonomy in her life. And other people said that too, who I talked to.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, we have this group of sewers that are amazing. And generally around September, we'll have parents come in with bags of clothes to have their children's clothing repaired for the fall. And I think that when we talk about affordability and rising prices, we have to think about if you have a child who, you know, is going through a growth spurt and, you know, being able to take clothing from an older sibling and having it altered and, it, you know, that has an impact. You know, not having to buy a new toaster, that has an impact. You know, affordability, it's a difficult thing to address at the local level. But we do think our repair cafe does ensure that people have this opportunity to avoid having a, you know, the cost of purchasing something new that they don't necessarily need to buy.
Do you see your repair cafe as an anti-consumerist event?
Well, yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, we find ourselves in a time when we have corporations that are, you know, creating products that have a shelf life. And once, you know, we purchased a washing machine in my household a couple of years ago, and the people who sold it to us, they said, well, this one will last about 8 years. You know, others will last maybe five. We're like, 8 years, 5 years. You know, we are coming off of a washing machine that was 25 years old, you know, an old Maytag. So it's unfortunate that we live in a time when, you know, profits are prioritized over people. But that's, you know, that's where if you can repair something, and the right to repair laws are so incredibly important. Because, you know, it keeps things out of the trash. It keeps money in our pocket, you know. It's
Right. Your thoughts, Maria?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what we noticed, we do an exit survey. And one of the things that we see the most is people will say, I'm going to go home and find what I'm going to bring next. Like, they have, it changes their mindset. I don't have to put it in the corner. I don't have to get rid of it. I could actually get to a repair cafe and try to get it fixed. And so I think it is definitely a money saver, because once you kind of get hooked on, wow, like I have two new shirts now that I haven't worn in a while, then you actually start to go hunting for things that you could have repaired.
And zooming out, Amy, I mean, what do you think this says about wider consumer trends? Like, are people resisting capitalism through repair cafes?
There were some people I talked to who were at the repair fair who expressly came in with sort of an anti-consumerism mindset. Other people came in for practical reasons. They hadn't. There was a couple who had an air filter, and these are expensive items, and it was broken, and it would have cost, actually, I should say, when they contacted the big box store where they bought it from, no one was willing to even bother to fix it.
Oh, okay.
But this thing is several hundred dollars, and then they brought it to the repair fair, and someone fixed it. And so I don't think they came in with that mindset, but I think it did change their minds. And the interesting thing about this couple, they were former Chicago Police Department folks, and they were retired. And then one of them said, next time I'm going to bring in my gun holster, because they were leather maker, you know, leather workers at the repair fair. So it was cool to see them rethink things as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the spirit of what Maria just brought up, how are you seeing that these events are promoting more sustainable consumer habits?
Well, you know, at our last repair cafe, we had a gentleman who came in wearing a shirt that said, I am Charlie Kirk. You know, he likely wasn't hugely into sustainability. He may not believe in government as much as the person sitting next to him. But he walked out with newly sharpened knives and a repaired lamp. So I think that, you know, like Maria said, people come to the repair cafe. They see that there's an opportunity to, you know, save things that don't necessarily need to be replaced. And I think that sort of breeds this new notion that we don't have to throw everything out. We don't have to be a disposable society. You know, I think, you know, and it inspires people to be more thoughtful, I just think, about, you know, the items that they have.
So when and where will your next repair cafe be?
Our next repair cafe is at the Township of Lyons at 6404 Joliet Road, and it is on Saturday, July 18th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Okay, Maria.
Our next repair cafe, we host them twice a year, April and October, the third weekend. So October 17th, we're at our Romeoville campus in Romeoville, Illinois, and we're from 10 o'clock until 2.
Awesome.
And our repair cafe is monthly. So it's always the third Saturday of the month from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. So if you miss it this month, we're back in August.
Awesome. And that's in the Township of Lyons.
Township of Lyons building, yes.
We've been talking with Maria Anna Rafak of the Joliet Junior College, Elise Hoffenberg of the Township of Lyons, and Amy Yee from the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for sticking with us. Now we'll turn to the top news stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and WBEZ senior producer Maha Ahmed. Claire kicks things off with some big news out of Chicago City Council. Here she is.
One of Mayor Brandon Johnson's most ardent, you could say, city council critics is apparently not seeking re-election as an alder. This is Southside alderperson Marty Quinn of the 13th Ward. And he tells the Sun-Times, he also made a statement that he has made a decision not to run in next year's municipal elections. He was part, if you can remember, of a renegade block of alders who had rejected Johnson's budget initially and passed their own sort of renegade alternative budget.
The alternative budget,
that's
yes.
That's right. Over the mayor's objections, Quinn was actually elected back in 2011, but he was also, we should remind listeners, very close to imprisoned former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Mm-hmm. And he has been really open about his relationship, says he's spoken to Madigan multiple times since Madigan became a federal inmate.
Yeah.
And remember those storms in June? Who could forget?
That's
with
right.
The derecho winds? So the 13th Ward, Quinn's ward, was the one that the WBEZ analysis found got the most 311 calls, hit heaviest from that storm.
Interesting.
So just an interesting kind of side note there.
I thought it was interesting, too, that he told our colleague Fran Spielman of the Sun-Times that, you know, he's, quote, left it all out on the field and he's got no energy left that's required for the job. So.
And we should, you know, also remind people that Mayor Johnson has yet to announce his own bid for re-election. So interesting that some of the alders are now coming out saying this before we even know what Mayor Johnson's going to do.
Right.
He could also use one less critic in city council.
He sure could.
Which is going to happen.
He sure could. Let's talk about the taste of Chicago. I was making my way into the studio today and saw all the preparation along Lakeshore Drive, looking over at Grand Park, of course. Mm-hmm. It's kicking off. It's starting today, is
today.
It?
Today. Okay. It's kicking off today. 5-day festival. It's running till Sunday. As folks who've been to it before know, it's... You know,
many trucks lined up.
Dozens and dozens of food vendors from across the city come to Grant Park, and you're able to sort of sample fare from all around the city. Of course, the last few years, it's been in September because of the NASCAR street race that took over this weekend, but it is back to its home weekend of in July. And today it's kicking off with, you know, they also have music there. It's not just food. And indie pop band Beach Bunny is going to kick off the opening day today on the main stage. And other headliners, if you are so inclined to go throughout the next few days, will be R&B artist Babyface.
Oh.
Hometown rapper Common. I know, Sasha, you said you haven't been to the Taste before.
This might be the year to
go
to
for turkey leg and baby face. Why wouldn't you do
turkey
that?
Turkey leg and baby face. Yeah.
That should really be the line for the Taste of Chicago. That should be the slogan.
And a rainbow cone.
Yes.
You cannot go wrong with that.
You
that
cannot is true. Walk out without having a rainbow
that
cone.
That is true. Let's talk about some news here in house, Claire. Our parent company, Chicago Public Media, has got some news today for the audience. What are they doing? What are we up to?
Yes, it is launching a website that it says can help residents better understand the issue shaping their lives. So this is called Chicago.com. Chicago Public Media also owns the Sun-Times as well as our sister station, Vocalo, but it's debuting Chicago.com officially in the fall. The Chicago Community Trust donated that domain to us. So this has been around in existence for a while, but now it is going to be live. There's a little bit of a preview from what I understand online right now, Chicago.com, but that official website is going to include Chicago area information, mm-hmm. civic and cultural resources, community source knowledge, and opportunities for audience participation.
Awesome. And folks can get an early look at Chicago.com.
That's
starting
right.
today.
A bit of a sneak peek.
A little sneak peek. Not, and I did test yeah. it, and it's there.
It's there.
Yes.
It works.
It works.
Awesome. Now, Claire, we've got health news, too. There is a really nasty virus that's been going around. What should folks be watching out for if they haven't come in contact with it already?
This is an intestinal illness, and it's on the rise in Illinois. We should tell you that it's also on the rise in 18 states across the United States. But the Illinois Department of Public Health has reported 141 cases of cyclosporalysis. It is often contracted by consuming contaminated foods. So really just sort of getting, you know, maybe a bad egg or something like that. And apparently it's pretty nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to say this before the show.
Cyclosporiasis.
So it's just a really bad stomach bug.
Essentially, yeah. But it can cause explosive diarrhea.
Yeah.
And
not
nausea
good.
And fatigue.
Yeah.
Health officials do say here in Illinois, anyway, they've been able to trace some of this. 62 of the cases here belong to people who traveled outside of the United States. 59 cases also traveled domestically. So it seems to be something that's crossing state lines at the very least, and also crossing country lines.
Yeah.
From what I read, it is not contagious.
It's just the food that
food
you're consuming.
It's the food that you're eating. So you can't like pass it to a person.
No, but if you had a bad egg that I passed to you, then you could get it from that. But I mean, it sounds like something that Michigan was really dealing with. They had over 700 cases of this.
Oof.
So on the rise across the Midwest, something to keep our eyes on, not our stomach so much.
We focus so much on like the, you know, spring sicknesses and the fall sicknesses and the flus and stuff like that. And you tend to let your guard down.
Right.
In the summer.
You miss the ones that show up in July.
Yeah.
Right. You think all we got to deal with is a heat wave. But no. It's cyclosporiasis out there,
apparently.
Too. All right. Obama Center tickets are available yet again. Right.
As of a few minutes ago, this is one of the hottest tickets in town.
I'm hearing, actually, they're not on sale till 10. They've updated it.
I
think they're getting the systems all
together.
I have
outdated information. As of an hour ago, I was pretty sure it was 9 a.m.
So okay, 10 a.m., 10 a.m.
They're releasing more tickets this morning. The museum, you know, was sold out through November, but a new batch is supposed to be released today. Online wait times are expected to still be pretty long. So if you haven't gotten your ticket and you're going to go online, maybe have a couple of dates in mind of
when you're flexible.
Be flexible. Don't, you know, be too, you know, tight fisted on one specific day. I will have to admit, I still haven't gotten my Obama.
So
this is for the museum
at 10 o'clock, you should jump online.
Maybe I should jump
yourself.
On. I mean, we have, as you know, we have been to the campus. We have seen the grounds.
Right.
It's beautiful. A lot of
But you want to get into those floors.
I want to get into the museum, and I'm just a procrastinator and haven't gotten onto the website yet.
Because I'll be there in late August.
Oh, you've got your tickets.
Oh, honey, I don't procrastinate.
I don't know how to plan this far ahead. I don't know. It's July,
now's
and I'm going
to
buy tickets for like January.
Part of the early batch. Yeah.
All right. I got to get on this.
Yeah. New Year's Eve at the Obama Center. That could be
fun. Ooh,
that's a good one. Yeah,
it's actually really cute.
Just a reminder, the outdoor spaces in the library are free and open to the public, but if you want to get into the museum, new tickets are coming out today.
Today at 10 o'clock. Now, if folks want to spend this evening doing something that costs $0, Claire, they've got an option at Navy Pier, don't they?
That is correct. So we recall the July 4th weather. It wasn't so pretty. A lot of fireworks displays across the suburbs were rained out. We didn't see many fireworks along the lakefront. The Navy Pier has their traditional fireworks display. They doubled down this year. They planned to anyway. And the fireworks did go off, but fog sort of prevented everyone from really being able to see the spectacle.
Right.
So in exchange, Navy Pier is offering, to coincide with its Wednesday night fireworks, free Centennial Wheel ride.
Oh,
so
nice.
After 6 o'clock today, trying to make good to the many people who were here and left disappointed, come on down, see the fireworks.
Sounds like another long line.
Catch a ride.
Yeah.
Well, free events, you know, sometimes you're going to run into a little line.
Oh, for sure.
But I think it's a nice gesture nonetheless.
Yeah. What other stories are you following?
Well, just in the middle of baseball season, World Cup action, as the Chicago Bulls now getting ready to open their summer league play. So this is really just an opportunity for some of the team's younger talent to sort of show their stuff. There's also invite-only tryouts for certain players that the Bulls might be looking to sign. Among the players, though, this is notable for Northwestern fans. You remember Boo Booey. Mm. He was one of their all-time leading scorers, and he has been invited to try out in the summer league. So the first game for this league is Friday against the Grizzlies at 7. So if you've been missing Boo Booey, you have a chance.
Here's your chance.
Here's your chance to see him again.
What's on your radar, Meha?
Do you remember when the Leo Catholic High School Choir was on America's Got Talent?
Do I remember? That was an incredible run.
Yeah. I mean, they came on the show. You remember them. Well, another Illinois group, youth group, is on America's Next Got...
Oh, really?
America's Got Talent.
Yes.
keep saying it wrong.
You're thinking of America's Next Top Model.
I know. I keep trying to say that.
For the millennials around.
I know. The Jesse White Tumblers made their debut yesterday on America's Got Talent.
Awesome.
And they got a standing ovation. They got 4 yes votes from the celebrity judges.
Incredible.
And so the Jesse White Tumblers, for folks who don't know, they are a youth acrobatic team in Chicago. And, you know, they got on stage. They put out an amazing performance. They did somersaults and acrobat. I mean, they were just like flipping all over
the
place.
Full of energy, I'm sure.
Full of energy. And I mean, I think the Chicago groups are just really representing well when they appear on America's Got Talent. Simon Cowell, Sofia Vergara, Howie Mandel, Mel B, all the celebrity judges, they just absolutely loved it. Simon Cowell, who famously hates everything, he said he...
Simon loved it?
He thought it was sensational.
Amazing.
So just for me, I'm kind of just watching where they go from here. I'm really excited to see
them. The Jesse White Tumblers, I mean, they're a big deal.
They're
right?
iconic. They've been around like... I mean, this group, the name Jesse White Tumblers has been around for like 67 years.
Oh, for sure. So. And they're at just about every parade here in the Chicago area.
Every basketball game.
Bud Billiken, yep. 4th of July. So that's good stuff.
So rooting for those kids.
Let's cheer them on America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
WBEZ's Claire Lane and Meha Ahmed.
This episode of In the Loop is produced by me, Hunter Manet. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. If you like what you just heard, we hope you join us for more and head over to wbez.org/in the loop or subscribe to this feed so you never miss a conversation. Thanks for listening.